Davis Van Opdorp here with Matt Ford and Felix Tomzet after a crazy match day in the Bundesliga. Lots of goals, lots of upsets, and two big derbies that had major implications in the title race. We're going to talk about both of those. We're also going to talk about relegation with only a handful of games left and how those teams could fare in the second division and how those teams in the second division could possibly fare in the first division. But with title race on everybody's mind, let's get to that first. So, when it comes to derbies, we couldn't have really asked for two better derbies, that being the Bavarian derby between Nuremberg and Bayern Munich, and of course the Riviera derby between Borussia Dortmund and Schalke. Before we get into discussion about each of those games, which we're going to spend most of the podcast talking about, I wanted to ask first, which result did you think was more shocking? Of course, Schalke won 4-2 over Dortmund, and Bayern Munich drew with Nuremberg 1-1.
I think the on balance, the Schalke result was more shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I mean, we've talked to several times, haven't we, on this podcast this season about just how incredibly, unwatchably bad the Schalke team is.
Well, Nuremberg haven't been easy on the eyes either.
Yeah, but we expected it from them, and more importantly than Jorgenberg, we've seen on a few occasions that Bayern have these performances in them, don't they? Where they don't turn up on occasion, they look a bit flat-footed on occasion, a bit uncreative on occasion, they lack pace and creativity, and all those things came to the fore against Jorgenberg. So as much as both were massive shocks, I would rank the Schalke result just a little bit higher in terms of shock.
I agree. I'll just add that Nuremberg's performances recently have not been bad at all. I mean, they've been playing good football, entertaining football. Results haven't necessarily gone their way, but their position in the table is pretty clear. And in that sense, okay, it was a rather surprising result, that draw against Bayern, but at the same time, everything on the balance, the Schalke result is just out of this world.
Yeah, we'll get to the I'm actually surprised by this, because I thought it would be the more controversial opinion to think that the Schalke upset was the more surprising performance, let's get into it, because I think we're all in agreement here. Matt, we talked about obviously that 5-minute stretch right around the hour marks where Marco Reus got sent off. And then the foul that Marco Reus got sent off for, Daniel Caligiuri whacked in a free kick that couldn't have been defended at all, no matter who the goalkeeper was. And then moments later, then Marius Wolves gets sent off. Why did Dortmund collapse like this? Because they were in the title race for most of this. Afterwards, they said they felt a lot of the players and Lucien Favre also said that yeah, the title race is over with this result. So why did they not show up to the occasion and in a home game against one of the worst sides in the Bundesliga?
Few factors coming together, mainly linked by the common denominator of the pressure on them and being unable to cope with it ultimately. There they were at that point after an hour played, 2-1 down against Schalke, and they needed two goals. They needed the ball back desperately to get themselves into a position where they could try and break Schalke down, and that led to, I think, that desperation to regain possession is probably what explains the tackles that both Marco Reus and Marius Wolf put in. Both had pretty much identical fouls on the same player, Suat Serdar, within the space of 5 minutes. Marco Reus admitted as much, didn't he, post-match? He admitted that he was late. You can almost understand it a little bit for Marius Wolf being slightly less experienced, but for Marco Reus, that was a massive surprise to me. He's obviously a huge leadership personality and talisman for Borussia Dortmund. And if any of those players were going to lose their heads in that pressured environment, I didn't think it would be him. It wasn't even a particularly necessary challenge. Serdar wasn't driving forward. He was going more in a horizontal direction. And Reus has got it all wrong.
I think that red card was debatable. That's because that was also a straight red. That wasn't a second yellow. But he shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place.
No, we shouldn't. And to be honest, Dortmund shouldn't have been in the position that they were 2-1 down in the first place either. It was five disastrous minutes, but incredible game from start to finish. Thought after the first 15-20 minutes when Goetze gave Dortmund the lead, really fantastically worked goal, a beautiful little ball in from Jadon Sancho.
Assist of the season for me, absolutely.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It was good. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it was without even looking, without Bale even lifting his foot back, he's chipped that ball into the run of Goetze absolutely perfectly. It's a fantastic goal.
Fantastic run too from Goetze.
Yeah, good run from Goetze. But that was it then. Dortmund didn't create anything else after that.
Yeah,
I thought it was particularly surprising. Credit to Schalke for. Yeah, I think probably the best defensive performance of the season from them. Maybe Man City at home aside, although they did collapse later on. Where do we start with Dortmund on that performance?
Yeah, so Felix, how does this make... I mean, Lucien Favre had this... We've talked about it at length earlier in the season, but Lucien Favre had this team up 9 points on Bayern Munich. And now he's at the in the position where a loss in the Revier Derby almost put them out of contention of the title race, although some would argue with some of the opponents they have coming up that it might be difficult for them in the title race anyways. So what do we think of Lucien Favre now? Because he was a guy that came in that put them in a position that was that I think we've all said is more advanced than they should have been. But he had a chance at winning the league trophy, and now it seems like going into the biggest rivalry against a team that is 15th in the table, and that hadn't looked good at all under Huub Stevens before this. They blew it at home.
It's interesting you say that, but just before coming here, I just read an opinion piece by one of Bild's writers that suggests that if BVB does not win the title, they should sack Favre. I thought that was harsh.
That's a little bit harsh, isn't it?
Because at the end of the day, we need to bear in mind why Favre was initially signed. He was signed to take a group of young players and make them progress, make them move forward. And I don't think there's absolutely any doubt that in terms of that alone, that has been achieved with Dortmund. You have so many young players. You have Jadon Sancho, who has been an absolute revelation this season. And in that sense, I don't think Favre did a bad job, quite the opposite. Also, if we go back to the beginning of the season, when Dortmund was starting to pick up the pace, pick up points, and everyone had thought, hang on a minute, they might be winning, that they might be on course to winning the title here. Even back then, Watzke and Zorc came on camera and said, absolutely, our target from the beginning of the season was not winning the title, it was moving forward. It was taking a group of young players and see how we can take them and make their talents more apparent and sort of bring them forward. I don't think there's any doubt that Favre has achieved that. For me, big time. I mean, despite that last period of the last couple of games in which BVB are not doing very well, to me, that Schalke game reminded a bit of the Mainz game recently. It's just that the difference was that back then BVB went 2-0 up against Mainz, and then they just turned off. I mean, basically Mainz started pulling on the pressure in Dortmund. They scored one, but they couldn't score the equalizer, and everyone back then hailed Roman Bürki for his magnificent saves. It's just that this time round, it seemed like BVB had turned off way earlier. It was inexplicable to me.
I think one way of explaining it is the change in expectations around Dortmund. I think you're absolutely right to point out that this wasn't, we said it ourselves, this wasn't Rusty Dortmund's aim this season, but the expectations and the officially stated aim of the club did change a few weeks ago when Watzke and Zorc, you know, officially did come out and said, well, no, we now find ourselves in the position we're in. Of course the aim's the title. Of course we want to win it. It's our best chance in 7 years. Might be the best chance in the 7 years to come to win a title. And since that moment, the emotional circumstances around Borussia Dortmund have changed. You're right to mention the Mainz game. They very, very nearly cracked under the pressure there. And like I said, I think they did crack under the pressure against Schalke, and not just some of the individual decisions made by players like Marco Reus and Marius Wolf on the pitch, but also some of the decisions made by Lucien Favre on the side. I thought he was very late in introducing Christian Pulisic. Schalke at first 75 minutes had sat so deep, and all credit to them. I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Zorc or Sebastian Kehl afterwards criticised Schalke, saying they didn't want to play football. And I'm sorry, Schalke cannot play football. It's not that they didn't want to, they simply cannot. So I can't blame them for 1 second for sitting there defending like the way they did and relying on a fantastic individual performance from Daniel Calajorbi to get them the goals at the other end and playing against nine men.
And by the way, the other Schalke goal came from a set piece, which Dortmund have struggled from all year. So
exactly. Maybe
that's something that would have... I mean, that was a bad matchup in and of itself.
Exactly.
But I mean,
it's a separate topic, the fact that to what extent were Schalke... Or does Schalke deserve the massive praise they've got and the way they were celebrating massively in front of their fans at the end and as if everything had turned a corner? No, they weren't. Schalke, all credit to them for the way they actually turned up and fought... they really weren't that good.
And, no, they weren't.
They really weren't. Like you said, a goal from a set piece, a goal from a penalty, which only came about because...
Because
Jadon Sancho was still being treated off the pitch, having been hit by a lighter thrown from the away end.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit iffy. And then the fourth goal came.
Well, that penalty came from a handball decision that Lucien Favre spoke about right after the game. And
even that was, well, controversial in Favre's mind, and only controversial from the point of view that I think we all disagree with the rule.
Right.
But given what the rule is, it wasn't controversial. I mean, it's not really Felix Weyer, the referee's fault that he had to give that.
And also it's the second. I mean, it's also the second handball that Julian Weigl has been called for. Yeah, exactly. That was the second handball that he's been called for since the rule has been changed.
It is. I mean, that's a different discussion altogether. I think we're not. I don't think we're here to discuss the merits of that rule today.
No, I know.
Over time, Lucien Favre clearly wasn't happy. But either way, going back to the tactical setup that he had, apart from Jadon Sancho, Dortmund were struggling to create anything whatsoever against the Schalke defence, and yet I'd have brought Alcacer on at half-time straight away. And I think it's surprising he didn't actually start, to be honest, although we all know how good he has been off the bench. I thought he brought Pulisic on far too late. Too often, Schalke did well to force BVB down the middle so often, but apart from the goal, nothing else came from that, and they congested the middle of the park so well, Schalke, that Dortmund had absolutely nowhere to go. It showed later on, even when Dortmund only had nine men, when they got down that left-hand side and cut the ball across, that's where the goal that made it 4-2 came from. 4-2? Yes.
Mm-hmm. from Breelenbolo, yeah.
Made it 3-2 at the time.
Oh, sorry,
Breelenbolo scored. Lost track of all the goals in that game. There were questions to be asked of Favre there, and then to come out, and a colleague of ours, Matt Pearson, wrote a piece afterwards saying that Favre had to come out and, he had a massive rant about the handball rule. We can all agree with that, but that's not why Dortmund lost that game.
No.
There are a lot more questions to be asked. It didn't help anyone that Favre's there pushing the blame away. Maybe it was on purpose. Maybe he was doing it on purpose to distract attention away from his own coaching performance and his players' performance. So I thought that was a bit odd. And the other thing that I thought was quite odd, although, obviously he said it in the heat of the moment, but to concede the title.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird,
He was explicitly asked, does that mean the Bundesliga race is over? If I was a Borussia Dortmund fan, the last thing I want before the match day is even finished, in that sort of moment after a defeat to your biggest local rival, is for him to say, yeah. And he almost even physically shrugged, like, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
Not a particularly encouraging attitude.
I mean, at the same time, we just said that when Zorc and Watzke said back in the day that this is our chance to get the title, if that has put pressure on Dortmund, wouldn't it be more constructive from Favre's side to say, okay, it's done, leave it. Let's just try and do something with the games we have left.
Maybe, although I doubt that thinking was behind it. He seemed so worked up in the moment.
Yeah, that was. I think that was. I don't know if I would put so much stock in that as someone who obviously as a journalist. I mean, I think the journalist obviously asked the right question at the time, and but I mean, this is obviously he was Lucien Favre at the time was obviously very emotional.
He was, but it was quite unusual.
But obviously, that's the headline that everybody took away from that.
But it was unusual in that situation to see him like that. And I think Lucien Favre is generally quite a relatively clear thinking and relatively unemotional, if that's the right word, sort of figure. He does his work in his head, tactically, very meticulous. Doesn't carry away by his, you don't see that sort of rant very often from Lucien Favre, and I think he's been put in that position slightly by the change in expectations around Borussia Dortmund. Then, but I also don't blame Watzke and Zorc and the Borussia Dortmund hierarchy for setting those expectations, because they're in that situation that for the first time in 7 years they can come close to a title. So yeah, they should be going for it, but it's obvious on and off the pitch how that change in expectation has affected Borussia Dortmund emotionally.
So this win for Schalke has actually set them up rather well. I mean, they were in the relegation discussion, but now it seems like they're in complete control of their destiny, even though the other teams around them won.
It would have been a lot better had Stuttgart not gone and won 2 hours later. No one expected that either.
No, it was just a crazy, crazy weekend. But still now with the games left that they have, I mean, they have Augsburg, Leverkusen, and Stuttgart. Two of those teams, one of them Augsburg, who was also in this relegation discussion, but also, as Leverkusen showed, has their frailties. And as we saw against Freiburg a few months ago, they have their frailties, especially at the back. And Stuttgart on the last game of the season, if it did come down to that, they still have that game at home. So that they said, but regardless of everything that has happened this season, that win in the Derby, Felix, must have just made their season.
Absolutely, in more than one sense. I think Schalke's season has been absolutely horrendous so far.
I was putting it very politely, Felix.
I'm trying to keep it PC here. It's an absolutely horrible season from Schalke's point of view. And that single win, you could just see the videos afterwards of those Schalke players celebrating with Geraldo Samoa and all the rest. You just see the sort of sense of relief on their faces. It was pretty interesting to see that. Hoop Stevens drinking a beer.
Sat calmly in the corner of the pub. Hoop Stevens sipping on his pint.
that was a very interesting sight. But it was just so, you could see they're relieved. You could see that something was released by that Derby win. Practically speaking, that win puts them in a very, very good position in the relegation battles. I would say they're as good as safe. They're not quite there. 9 points to go.
Not technically. So there's three games left. And there's six points ahead of Stuttgart. Yeah, if Stuttgart lose next week, then obviously they're as good as safe.
Yeah. But and we can safely assume that they're going to try and capitalize on that Derby win and sort of improve the spirits at the Schalke, in the cabin, and sort of use that into results. I would assume they're gonna do well against Augsburg. At least it's a team that also, like, in a rather similar position to Schalke, just 1 point above them, if I'm not mistaken. But they're also as good as safe. It's gonna be very, very, very surprising to see Schalke basically in any risk whatsoever from now till the end of the season. I don't think that's very likely at all.
Before we get to some of the fan stuff, I saw this rumor today, and I have to ask both of you about it. There was a story in Kicker today that Domenico Tedesco may come back as their coach at some point in the future.
It's more than a rumor. It seems quite nailed on that this thought process has taken place in Gelsenkirchen, that they don't want to rule out another approach to Tedesco in future.
Is there any justification for this that we can think of that might work?
Yes. I can think of several reasons why that would be a good idea. Firstly, I personally made it clear that my opinion a few weeks ago when they sacked Tedesco was that it was a little bit strange, given that they'd already made the decision to sack Christian Heidel, sporting director, which in my mind showed that Schalke have identified where the problem is. Is it the coach or is it the sporting director? We've decided it's the sporting director. Off you go. Then a few weeks later, say, right, well, the coach as well. You can go as well. I thought that was a bit strange.
But that came after a 7-0 defeat to Manchester City.
We can all lose. We can all lose 7-0 to Manchester.
But I was talking to you at the time. I saw you briefly while you were watching that game, and you said, "Disregard everything I said on that podcast before. He needs to go. So why should he come back?"
Yeah.
First of all, for his personal career, I would not go anywhere close to Schalke.
I wouldn't go back there right this moment, and I think that's the second part of the argument that I was going to make. I think obviously one of the reasons why it did make sense for him to go was, okay, in the short term, the 7-0, you are right. I did say that. That's fair enough. And yeah.
Maybe that was a Lucien Favre moment.
1-0.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, go on, I'll give Davis that. However, in the longer term, the reason why he probably wouldn't go back in the next 2 years is that, by all accounts, a lot of the relationship between him and some of the players in that Christian Heidel team, had been a bit ruptured.
That's true.
There wouldn't be a room for him to go back straight away. However, going forward, once Schalke have sorted out the other positions they need to fill in, so a new sporting director, a new technical director.
Technical director is the big one. Exactly.
Once that's been done, and once they've appointed a, not interim, but maybe a sort of a coach for a couple of years to tie them over to tie over that team while the technical and sporting director do their job of building a new squad, that might be Dieter Hecking. That's a name currently being suggested for a 2 year period, in a similar way to what Lucien Favre has been planned to do at Borussia Dortmund for a few years at least. At that point, after that, Schalke then needs to start moving forward. Dieter Hecking, as we've seen at Borussia Mönchengladbach, did a good job up to a point, but like Gladbach, Schalke need to move forward. They need to move away from this obsession with the 1997 team that won the UEFA Cup, this mentality that, well, we're just a hard-working, working-class miners team from Gelsenkirchen. They need to move away from that. They need to be more modern, more forward-thinking. They missed out on Marco Rosa already. I think that's a really good appointment from Gladbach's point of view. Who's the standout name? They already had him. If you're going to look forward and want a new coach from a new generation with new ideas, I think Domenico Tedesco was that man. So I can see in a couple of years why the idea of him coming back isn't totally mental.
Felix, can you conceive of a future that has Domenico Tedesco coaching Schalke once again?
I can. I just wanted to put this rumor into perspective. What Kicker actually said was that, first of all, just to continue what you said, Dieter Hecking, they are saying that Dieter Hecking is currently the leading candidate for the position. David Wagner is also being mentioned, also an interesting name.
The
article in Kicker used is basically your argumentation. Schalke want to stabilize the ship. They want to have a coach that they know exactly what to expect, exactly what are we going to get from him. And just after 2 years of stability, we're going to get a young coach in. Yeah. Whether that'll be Tedesco or not, again, continuing to put that into perspective, the Kicker article said that Tedesco is highly valued in the Schalke boardroom. Mm-hmm. People really, really hold him to high regard. They think highly of him. But the reason they would not employ him right now is exactly what you said. They think it's too early, and they think that the Schalke dressing room does not trust him as of now because it's too fresh, and that's why they're going to go with a different coach. I personally think Domenico Tedesco has a brilliant future ahead of him. I really do think Schalke could do worse than signing him at some point down the line, whenever that may be, in maybe 2-3 years. I have no idea. That's for time will tell. But at the same time, I think they could do worse.
Ultimately, it's going to be another couple of wasted years for Schalke. I mean,
exactly.
They've wasted 2.5 years with Christian Heidel. First of all, appointing Marcus Weinziel, that was a waste. Then the team that he gave to Tedesco, I don't want to totally absolve Tedesco from blame. I thought he ran out of ideas a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he was provided with a team which was nowhere near up to scratch. So another 2 years down the drain from Schalke's point of view. Now they want another 2 years stabilising the ship, which it needs doing. But this is adding up to 5, 6, maybe even more years of absolute standing still for Schalke. Wasted years and lots of mismanagement.
All right, so let's go into obviously this was a huge derby between Dortmund and Schalke. It always has been.
Schalke making habit of scoring 4 goals.
Wait, yeah, second time.
But the some of the things that happened in the terraces was distasteful to say the least. There was before the game that Borussia Dortmund's fans lifted a sign.
They were both pretty much jarring, or towards the start of the game.
So there's the Dortmund fans lifted a sign that had a homophobic, was it a slur, a homophobic slur, or is it just
a reference? They referred to, there's one particular Dortmund ultra group known as the Desperados. As you could see from the, they pretty much signed the banner, so you knew who it was from.
Right.
They referred to Schalke as queers, which I think we can all agree is not a particularly acceptable way to refer to people in 2019 or ever. So,
and then on the other side, there was the Schalke fans. Just only not very many of them, but it wasn't a huge. It wasn't as big of a sign as the Dortmund one, but it was referencing that basically they were calling for the release of the Dortmund bus attacker, which Mark Bartra on Twitter responded to, and I don't know if anybody else from Dortmund did. Anybody else from Dortmund respond to that?
I don't think anyone from Dortmund did. Schalke officially apologized, haven't they? It was the same. It was again the group that did that. The Schalke group who displayed that banner again, known as the Hugos. They were the same group who they showed a similar banner at the reverse fixture in Gelsenkirchen. They're also, in terms of the spectrum within the Schalke ultra scene, I'd say relatively more extreme, on the more extreme end of that spectrum. They have to make a difference, I think, between that group and the bigger group, which is the Ultras Gelsenkirchen. They're a lot bigger. But either way, wherever it comes from, I wrote a piece afterwards saying that I just think it's a bit... It's not only out of order, that's obviously the case, but it's also unnecessary and unhelpful on lots of levels.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those ultra scenes and fan scenes at Schalke and Dortmund, two of the biggest in Germany, well known for good, huge, creative, choreographed initiatives, political activism on and off in football and outside of football. They do a lot of good for German football in their own way. They wouldn't ever admit that they have anything in common. They have so many things to throw at each other, Dortmund and Schalke. Many ways to laugh at each other, take the mick out of each other, score points against each other. There's absolutely no need to resort to taking them, laughing about a threat on 28 lives, or reducing yourself to homophobic comments.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I totally agree. I think, as Matt mentioned, we're talking about, if we talk about like the main ultra groups in both sides, both in the Dortmund scene and in Schalke, those are people and groups that did a lot of good for their clubs, did a lot of good for their cities as well. Schalke's ultra specifically, I'm talking about Ultras GE, the big one, not specifically about Hugos, which, as you mentioned, were known to be a bit more extreme. But at the same time, the context in which people that are familiar with the scene in Germany have heard about those particular groups before are largely about their creativity. About with Schalke, we remember like 3-4 years ago, they were blocking a far-right protest in Gelsenkirchen. Large parts of Ultras GE were involved. Similar activities in the Dortmund scene. The Unity is a very famous group for that in Dortmund. And those particular two banners were, as you mentioned, it was above the fact that it was just off. It was just something that shouldn't be seen at a football stadium or indeed anywhere else in 2019. It was also counterproductive to the cause of ultras across Germany, I feel. Because at the end of the day, people that try to advocate for fan rights, they try to advocate for football fans to be seen in a certain way, for the ultras movement to be seen in a certain way. And when something like that happens, it's disheartening, it's disappointing, and at the end of the day, it's really, really unnecessary.
It sets everyone back, and it's unfortunate because, like I said, like Felix says as well, it is counterproductive. I think there's a parallel to be drawn here with the banners that were shown in the game between Borussia Mönchengladbach and Red Bull last week. I think there's a parallel.
We talked about that a lot too.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's actually the same argument. If no one saw, the Gladbach fans and ultras organised another big protest with loads of banners against the presence of Red Bull in the Bundesliga.
Which I don't think anybody here is denying that they have the right And like you said to me, they have legitimate arguments.
Yeah,
to...
I think there must have been maybe 30, 40 banners held up on Gladbach's Nordkurve, 99% of which were, expressed legitimate complaints and legitimate reasons. That's absolutely fine. One of them, however, referred to Ralf Rangnick's depression and burnout. It's not only out of order from a human point of view, it's also completely irrelevant. And it's not helped anyone, because now everyone's focus is on, look what the ultras have organised, a banner taking the mick out of someone's depression, someone's illness. And that's what the focus is now on. So it's also entirely counterproductive.
Yeah. Well, let's switch our focus now to the other derby game, which is that 1-1 draw between Nuremberg and Bayern Munich. What we said was the lesser surprising of these two derbies, but still a rather surprising result considering
what a match day.
Considering that Nuremberg is obviously in 17th place and Bayern Munich are trying to secure their 7th straight title. Felix, let's start with you. Just what were your impressions of this game? Because we did say off the top that Bayern Munich do have these performances in them, but lately they haven't really shown a performance like this, like in a too long time. They had a tough game against Bremen last week, and they struggled against Bremen again in the cup. But Bremen, of course, is a team that one could argue is on the ascension. Nuremberg look like they're going down at the end of the season. So where did this performance come from then?
I mean, yeah, at the same time, I personally feel like there was a certain effect from the BVB game. It felt like the whole of Germany basically sealed the title race and sort of Bayern got a bit complacent, to be honest. Having said that, the stats suggest that this is the 7th away game that Bayern conceded. So Bayern constantly concede
drop
goals
points,
away.
Yeah, yeah.
Concede goals.
I'm oh, conceded about. Goals, sorry.
Yeah, so it's hardly a new phenomenon. And as you mentioned, in both games against Bremen and Bayern were hardly at their best after like a period of time in which they were scoring goals for fun. And they were basically like, we remember the Dortmund game. We remember that Wolfsburg game. We just remember games in which they just beat opponents quite easily. Even like difficult opposition such as BVB. Whereas, I mean, it was a slow Bayern performance. It felt like Bayern they treated the game like the title was theirs, basically. That's how I felt. It showed at the same time. I mean, Nuremberg's performance was very, very good. I think we need to put an emphasis on that.
Yeah.
They were doing lots of justice to themselves. They were doing well to sort of get their name out there, making, like, they're basically as good as relegated, but at the same time, they will get relegated with honor after the recent string of performances. You also have to bear in mind that in the very same ground, Borussia Dortmund had a really hard time recently. It was also a draw. Nuremberg's fans are known to create quite an atmosphere. While we expect Bayern Munich to win this, it was a Bayern Funken derby. It was a heated derby from both ends, from both sets of fans. To me, it just felt like Bayern weren't up for it enough.
I think it's I think you might have somewhat of a point when it comes to that Borussia Dortmund game. That after that, I think even last week they had this 4-point lead, and it seemed like they were acting as if the title race was pretty much theirs. Even though the next day, Borussia Dortmund got a 4-1 win against Freiburg and made a 1 point again. Now, Niko Kovac did come out afterwards and did criticize his side pretty strongly. How much is he to blame for this drop in performance?
It's a question about his relationship and the way in which he communicates and connects with his players. I can't make up my mind as to where exactly that stands. But when you look at evidence such as the win against Dortmund and the week after the 4-1 win away at Fortuna Dusseldorf. There you got the impression, you've got an example of a big game against a huge rival, huge pressure, where Kovac clearly connected well with his team, and they implemented the instructions that he gave them, they clearly acted as a unit, and everything seemed rosy. Then you had the evidence a week after against a lesser fancy team, a team that Bayern were expected to beat, and they did it. So in those two games, you get the suggestion that there's been a good connection, a good togetherness and cooperation between coach and playing staff. And then, yeah, in the weeks after, you see against the two games against Bremen in League and Cup, it didn't click as easy for Bayern. I wonder if it can be explained by the fact that they're coming off having won the previous two games by 9-1. Suddenly they think, oh, it's all working now. So you drop off slightly mentally from a psychological point of view. Whether it is the case, I'm not sure if it can be explained so in such simple terms. But then once again, in the same way that they went into those Bremen games on the back of such convincing wins over Dortmund and Dusseldorf, they went into the Nuremberg game yesterday on the back of the knowledge that we can go 4 points clear here. Borussia Dortmund have completely imploded. And suddenly there was no more sign of the free-flowing Bayern Munich that we've seen at parts of the second half of the season. Suddenly they looked slow. I mean, again, credit to Nuremberg in the same way we credited Schalke. Defended really, really well. Arguably their best defensive performance of the season. Well, that's not overly surprising. You know, they have defended better in recent weeks. Nuremberg picked up a few decent points here and there.
Yeah. Kept Dortmund from scoring.
Yep, kept Dortmund from scoring. Draw against Schalke. They drew in Stuttgart, I believe. They were unlucky to lose against Red Bull at home. So slowly but surely, little things are clicking into place for Nuremberg. Maybe a little bit too little too late. But Bayern couldn't break them down. It took them 60 minutes to create a chance from open play.
Yeah.
Before that, the chances came from, I think there was a Lewandowski shot, a free kick went over the bar. There was Alaba and James both hit the bar, from free kicks. Müller seemed a little bit clueless out on the right against such a deep line defense.
Yeah, I was not surprised at all that he came off at halftime.
Exactly.
And I think that was definitely the right. I'm actually surprised why Serge Gnabry didn't start that game.
Yeah, I am too. Serge Gnabry's been, for me, the standout Bayern player of this season.
But maybe that's why I'm wondering, like, did Niko Kovac think he needed to start Serge Gnabry in this game?
And if he did, I would question his tactical preparation. It was obvious that Nuremberg were going to defend really, really solidly.
Yeah.
Maybe you couldn't predict just how deep those lines of four would be and just how successful that would be. But in there, I mean, yeah, in my understanding too, you would rather have a dynamic, penetrative player like Serge Gnabry rather than Thomas Müller.
Especially when a player like Enrico Valentini, who's one of Nuremberg's best players, although granted more going forward than actually as a defender, that he wasn't playing. So
Even when he brought Gnabry on, though, Kovac was then furious at him for not tracking back for Nuremberg's goal, which left Matheus Pereira like pretty much on his own on the edge of the box with time to control, head up, pick your spot, make it 1-0. There were clearly issues there. Even Bayern's goal, when it came to it, was, I think at first glance, it looked like a great piece of skill from Serge Gnabry. I'm not sure how much you can credit him, really. I'll credit him with putting his foot in the right place. Maybe he has intelligently seen that coming, in which case, absolutely fair play to him. Yeah. However, Robert Bowers got to that ball first, and he has cleared it. He's just cleared it onto Gnabry's foot, and it's bounced over the goalkeeper. Slightly fortunate there as well. Not the free-flowing Bayern forwards you expected. So one German colleague of ours make a comment on Twitter saying that there were more rockets fired towards the Bayern goal from the away end behind the goal than there were actually from the pitch.
Yeah.
So it says a lot about Bayern's performance.
Yeah. So now we've done a deep dive in both of these games now. So there's three games left. Bayern Munich have a 2-point lead now. So what do we make of this title race the rest of the way? Because Dortmund obviously have a tough match coming up. That's against Werder Bremen. They're going to be without Marius Wolf, who we say is not a big deal, but he's been he's been a solid right back option for them, considering Lukas Piszczek doesn't look totally fit, and the fact that Hakimi's out. So, and then you have obviously Marco Reus suspended as well, and considering how well Bremen played, they didn't play well over the weekend, but they did play well against Bayern in both of the games they played last week. And then you have Bayern Munich going to Hannover. Is this something that could still get away from Dortmund, even though this obviously they like somewhat lucked out with the way that Nuremberg played?
I personally have to say that when it comes to Werder Bremen, I was first of all a personal moment of truth. I did the unfortunate choice of going to Fortuna Düsseldorf against Werder Bremen on Saturday instead of watching the Via Derby. Love me, people. Very, very sad decision.
I expected that to be a good game, too, though.
It was a good game. Yeah. It's just that I was in the away end. So, yeah, not great. But from the title race point of view, Werder Bremen look broken. They look like they feel like their season is over. And in many cases, it is, because the chances of them getting to Europe is basically... I've seen a couple of Bremen fans clinging on to the chance of Eintracht winning the Europa League and then not finishing in the top four spots, and then somehow the eighth position can also lead to Europe. Pure speculation. I think Werder Bremen's performances against Bayern were good. They were impressive. Arguably, they should and could have gotten more from that DFB Pokal game. But at the same time, having seen them against Düsseldorf, you feel like the players just can't wait for the season to be over. I do expect BVB to bounce back, to be honest. It's not going to be easy, but I do expect them to bounce back. Hannover are as good as down at home. It's basically 3 points to Bayern, I think, without any effort. Unless Thomas Doll can basically pull off something spectacular. I find it very, very
Thomas
hard
Doll,
to believe.
Tactical genius. Oh, yeah. You're going to do the job in Munich.
Well, what's interesting about... I mean, I think Jonathan and I, of course, 2 weeks ago looked at the schedules with five games to go. And I think we both kind of assumed that for Bayern Munich, Hannover and Nuremberg would be easy wins. But I think... like you said, Felix, you have to also look at who has what to play for. You know, Werder Bremen are 3 points behind Wolfsburg now after Wolfsburg's win, so they still have to leapfrog them and all the other teams that are trying to vie for Europe in order to get into the Europa League.
I think that's right. It's actually something I hadn't considered. I was looking at, I'll be in Bremen this Saturday. I was looking at it that this is the biggest hurdle that Borussia Dortmund have to overcome. However, having said that, I think it's actually right to point out that arguably Bremen's season probably ended with that semi-final defeat to Bayern. Mm-hmm. They were so close. They played well. That was their season. You know, a DFB Pokal final for Werder Bremen would have been absolutely huge, and a well-deserved Chevy on the top of Florian Kohfeldt's Werder Bremen cake.
Yeah,
I could put it that way. However, I think you're right to say that. Yeah, that the season's arguably over. You've watched Bremen more than me. And yeah, that can only play into Borussia Dortmund's hands if, like you say, it seems like Bremen's players have at least subconsciously accepted that their season is now done and dusted.
But then if you look at Hannover, I mean, we say, yeah, Thomas Doll, I mean, he has not done, the only thing that he's really done since taking over is even just win last week. That was like the only significant thing he's done. But they're still in touching range of Stuttgart. So who knows? I mean, if they get into that relegation playoff, I mean, we'll talk about that in a second. But they still have something to play for at the very least, even if that is not enough to go up against Bayern Munich. But I
think that's a little bit too speculative, to be honest.
I'm just saying the only point I'm trying to make here is that we cannot discount the fact of who is playing for what.
Exactly.
At least Hannover has something to play for.
Definitely, I think that's fair, but I think to expect Hannover to get a result in Munich is, if you're looking at it from a Borussia Dortmund point of view, you're going to have to assume, unfortunately, that Bayern are going to win all three games. You always do.
I don't know, because it gets interesting now, because you
have to be there to capitalize on that.
But then they play, because Bayern Munich play Frankfurt and Leipzig to end the season. Now, the Leipzig game might I mean, that'll be basically the tune-up before the German Cup final. So maybe that game won't, maybe Leipzig won't want it, won't show everything that they would show in a cup final. But still, those are two top four opponents that Bayern Munich have to face in two of the last three games.
I think in those last two games, as I said before, Bayern have the do have the tougher run-in with RB and Frankfurt. Like we said, with in terms of what other teams have to play for, Borussia Dortmund will be looking at this run-in now a little bit more positively, arguably. If Bremen are a little bit weaker, they have to get something there, though. That's, for me, still their toughest game.
Yeah.
I'd expect them, even without Marco Reus, I would expect them to beat Dusseldorf at home. It's in Dortmund, isn't it, the Dusseldorf
game? That's home, yeah.
And then Gladbach away, and Gladbach are having an absolute shocker. They were very, very poor away at Stuttgart. And I think, yeah, they're missing Wolf. Most importantly, they're missing Reus. However, there's an interesting stat in Kicker this week suggesting that Dortmund's points average per game isn't actually that much worse without Marco Reus this season. I think without Marco Reus, they've won 2.2 points per game. With him, 2.23 points per game. Mm. They've already shown that they've beaten Monaco, they've beaten RB, they've beaten Leverkusen, I think, and others without Marco Reus. A loss in terms of he's a captain and a talisman, but in terms of the actual football, the stats would suggest that might not be the biggest loss, or might not be as big a loss as they think.
Well, I think I did a story on this earlier this year, which was, and then what I think I found was, I think that historically, it's not necessarily about how many points. It's more about how many wins that they get when Marco Reus isn't there. And I think that is, of course, at this point in the season, that's what's key, is that, I mean, that's a player that can get you over the line, of course. I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum with Dortmund. Do they have those players that that can close a game, if you're 2-1 down, can you get one or two more goals with these players on the field? And I think that not having that player, but granted, I do think that Dortmund still have those players, so who knows? But let's go now to the bottom of the table, because I think this is because we did want to talk about this, and we're going to talk about a little bit of the second division, because it was also a crazy weekend in the second division as well. It was just a crazy weekend in Germany in general, and if you weren't in Germany this weekend, then you definitely missed out on some great, interesting football. So obviously, you mentioned earlier that Stuttgart won, so that kind of nullified the win that Hannover had. And of course, Nuremberg being now 1 point against Hannover, those three teams are now still relatively close. Now, if Stuttgart win next week or get a point next week, then Hannover is gone. But Nuremberg still has a small chance of getting into that playoff spot, but it was going to be a little bit more difficult for them. So, I mean, what do we make of this relegation? Do we see this as more straightforward as in seasons past?
I see the situation from the Division 1 point of view much more straightforward. I think it's nailed on. Those three are going down, those three are going to be the bottom three, because Schalke will get out of that. I think we've discussed that. The only question then is who that... I think it will end up how it is at the moment. Stuttgart in the playoff, Hannover and Jorgenberg, as we've thought all season, going straight down. The only question is who is Stuttgart then going to play in that playoff?
Yeah.
There's been huge movements this weekend in Bundesliga 2, if anyone's missed it.
We don't talk about the second division a lot, but I think Felix, you brought it up when we were talking about what we're going to talk about today. So why don't you just, for us, why don't you just recap basically the main talking points and why it was such a big deal this weekend, to basically why it was so crazy in the second division this weekend.
Wow. Okay, basically the whole thing started on Friday as top of the league Cologne lost at home to Darmstadt, a mid-table side, causing coach Markus Anfang's sacking. A reminder, we're talking about a side that currently is in the lead, 5 points. I thought basically that the sacking of Anfang was fair, given how Cologne played this season. But anyways, that's not the point. Later on, Union Berlin and Hamburg played against each other. Union at the time was third or fourth, if I'm not mistaken.
Fourth.
And Haisfau were second. And it was in Berlin. Union won the game. And they're currently at level on points with Paderborn, a team.
No, actually, Union is still level on points with Hamburg.
With Hamburg, sorry. And 1 point below Paderborn at second. Now, Paderborn is an absolutely crazy story. Just 2 seasons ago, they were relegated from the third to the fourth division. However, that relegation did not happen purely due to Munich 1860 basically going bankrupt. So that automatically got them relegated to the fourth division due to all sorts of document issues with the German Football League and the German Football Association.
Essentially, so, Paderborn should have been in the fourth division last year.
Mm-hmm. But they ended up staying up due to basically technical issues. Year afterwards, they get promoted. And now they're in the second division and they're candidates of going up.
Going up two straight years.
That's incredible. And they're playing some fun football too. I mean, they've been scoring for fun, playing some attacking football. They're arguably the most fun team to watch in the second Bundesliga. From all sorts of other aspects, like Paderborn's location, stadium, and all sorts of things like that, people in Germany would probably not be so keen on Paderborn in the first division. But they've been fun to watch. So from the footballing angle of things, it could be interesting. I totally agree with what Matt said, because we can potentially get a relegation game between HSV and Stuttgart, which is huge. And even if it's going to be Union, it's still going to be a big, big deal. I think that's the most interesting relegation game in years, as far as I can remember, ever since I moved to Germany,
As fascinating as the Paderborn story is, them being up and down like a boomerang there throughout the leagues, the fact that Hamburg are suddenly in a position where they're not even on that playoff spot is absolutely incredible. If you consider that Cologne have sacked their coach despite being 5 points clear, despite being effectively guaranteed promotion, despite having scored 76 goals this season, despite having a Bundesliga front three of Anthony Modeste, John Cordoba and Simon Terodde, and they've sacked their coach, how on earth is Hannes Wolf clinging on to his position at Hamburg? They've not won in six. They were beaten 2-0 away at Union Berlin. They're suddenly fourth. They've still got to go away to Paderborn.
Yeah. By the way, Hannes Wolf, that name rings a bell. That was the Stuttgart coach.
Coach. Yeah, as another subplot, should they end up in the playoff. But there's no guarantee of that, given that they've, like I said, they've not won in six. They've forgotten how to win, it would seem. They still have to go away to Paderborn. It's absolutely nowhere near certain that Hamburg will even end up in third. Could quite conceivably be Union Berlin in that third spot.
But we've talked about this on the Saturdays on some Saturdays where we watched Bundesliga football together, because obviously the second division is on right before that. You said several times that this division is just terrible from top to bottom, and the fact that the fact that Cologne has felt like they needed to sack their coach, even though they're leading the division, speaks volumes, because Cologne seemed to think that they should be in a better position than they are, than top of the league.
Yeah, so the Cologne decision has definitely come. They're looking forward. I mean, like I said, although they have been pretty diabolical defensively in recent weeks, they conceded 4 away at Duisburg, 3 away at Dresden, and another 2 at home to Darmstadt. They've all season this has been on the card that they're capable of huge results. They put 8 past Dresden when they played them at home. But have then had games where they've been beaten at home by Bielefeld, I think, beat them at home. Some shocking performances. So there's a clear disconnect that's been going all season between Marcus Anfang's attacking capabilities, which we all knew about from Holstein Kiel the year before. They played Wolfsburg in the playoff last year. Cologne's attack is not in any doubt, but there's been absolutely zero sign that Anfang... Not only is he incapable of sorting out that defence, but he didn't seem to be making attempts to do so. And there was a clear feeling at FC Cologne that, yes, we're going up. but this is an accident waiting to happen in the Bundesliga next season, which is why he's been shown the door.
The fact that they're top, you're right to say, does
say how inconsistent and lacking in quality the teams beneath them are.
So then let me ask this question to kind of tie it back into the Bundesliga. Let's look at Hannover, because they're the least likely to survive of the three teams at the bottom. If Hannover go down, Felix, do you, like they did a couple of seasons ago, do you think it's likely, very likely that they'll just come back right back up?
I mean,
it all depends on who they're able to keep, obviously.
Of course. We've heard that Nkosuke is leaving already, and we can expect more departures. Anton is another name that probably will find another club. It depends on so many variables. You can never tell. Hannover are still, despite that recent win by fans, that they basically managed to get Martin Kidd, to beat Martin Kidd in that Mitgliedversammlung,
and the AGM.
Thank you. Despite that, Hannover are still a club in an unstable state.
Especially financially,
in terms of the playing staff, who's going to be the coach next season, whether it be Thomas Doll or not, nobody knows anything. Given the sides that will potentially play in the Zweite Bundesliga, we don't know. It's going to be an interesting season once again, but I definitely don't think that next season. We all remember that in the beginning of that season, everyone was talking about HSV and Köln as basically a guaranteed promotion. That was the sense that everyone was talking about, because of the magnitude and the size of those clubs and the financial backing that they have. Granted, HSV's financial troubles are well known. But at the same time, I don't think any club in that Zweite Bundesliga will be of that magnitude next season. Also, when it comes to Hamburg, I mean, it's a very interesting case. Their financial situation is woeful. Their fans weren't really sure they're going to get the league license for next season for the Erste Bundesliga because of the whole situation they have with Klaus-Michael Kühne, the investor that doesn't want to invest more money in the club. And sponsors, Fly Emirates, said sort of insinuated that they might pull off their support if they won't get promoted. So for Hamburg, it's almost an existential question to go up, and that just goes to emphasize the mistakes that they've done across the season.
But let's bring this discussion back, because I'm really curious about this, because Hannover, it seemed like Felix mentioned, Cologne and Hamburg, when they went down, the assumption was that they're big enough that they're going to come back up. Is that assumption still there with a club like Hannover? And with Nuremberg, they...
No, definitely not. I think that this season's been a bit of an anomaly with the assumption that Cologne and Hamburg can go straight back up. It's very rare that you see such collapses from such huge clubs with such bigger budgets. So that was a bit of an anomaly this season.
But when Stuttgart and Hannover went down, there was also a strong assumption that they would also go back up as well.
I think this year, with probably Nuremberg and Hannover going straight down, that's two of the weaker relegated teams since the likes of Ingolstadt and Darmstadt going out of the Bundesliga. Between the two, I don't think either of them are that good, but I think if you're going to pick one, Nuremberg would probably be in a slightly better position to come back up, just because for the first time in years they're a little bit more stable, and they almost went up this season with the expectation that we're just going to sit there, enjoy our year, not spend a lot of money, just save ourselves, go straight back down, but go down in a much better position than we were in previously. The only problem is they're going to have, no matter who stays down, whether Paderborn, Union or HSV, or two of them, will end up staying down, I would assume. It won't be easy for even Nuremberg or Hannover to come straight back up. Union, a little bit unpredictable, but getting better year on year. I don't think there's any guarantee that either Hannover or Nuremberg would come straight back up in the way that Cologne probably will.
And we talked about Cologne since even though they sacked their coach, they seem to be poised to come back up. Do we think that they're going to be a team that will stay in the Bundesliga next season? I mean, of course, again, there's a lot of factors, but I'm talking more about like how the club is currently set up. Do they have the means and the right people in charge to take advantage of being in the first division again?
They need a coach with a more rounded idea. They need a coach that can work with Armin Fay, the sporting director. They need more they need better defenders. I think they'd stay up in a similar way to Mainz and Freiburg.
And Düsseldorf.
Düsseldorf's a good example of that, a good example that they can follow. Friedhelm Funkel's following a clear philosophy. He's got a clear plan. He's had them have Düsseldorf not playing beyond their means, which is the mistake that Cologne make every single year. getting too far ahead of themselves and getting too carried away. They can stay up, but only because there's probably going to be worse teams in the league. I'd also expect Stuttgart to win whatever playoff they end up in, which might be a bit of a controversial shout.
Okay. Do you feel the same way? Well, we can get to that because we can get to a larger discussion on this, but do you feel the same way?
I feel the situation is a bit more problematic than it seems. One of the reasons for that is Armin Fee, the sporting director.
No, well, I meant more with Stuttgart than with Cologne.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. I think if it's going to be HSV, it's going to be a very interesting two games. That will have, given Hamburg's situation and given how they sort of had those last-minute survivals in the past, something tells me that if it's going to be Hamburg, they're going to go up for the first time in a while. That Zweite Bundesliga side wins a relegation game. If it's going to be Union, I do agree with Matt. I think it's going to be Stuttgart because they won the last game. They just sacked Markus Weinziel to sort of create that short-term shock. The next three games are going to be some sort of a way to see if it has the desired effect from the side of Stuttgart. But at the end of the day, if it's going to be against Union, I do see them staying up.
Okay. All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is on Twitter at Matt_4D. Felix Tomzett at F Tomzett. He is always good for a stream at least twice or three times a week. And I'm at Davis_VanOptorp. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.